into Common Sense, generally fun and hopefully helpful discussion on parenting and parenting culture. Hey, I'm Liz Gumbiner.
And I'm Kristen Chase, and we're the co-founders of CoolMomPicks.com. Today, we're going to be talking to author and podcaster and media maven Zibby Owens about storytelling and parenting. And you know what? Why it's so important. This is perfect for us, Liz. It's how we started.
We are authors and podcasters and storytellers too. So this should be a fun, chatty episode. I'm really excited. I could use a little just happy talk right now.
Yes. And as always, we will close out our show with our cool picks of the week. But first, let's tell you a little bit more about our awesome guest. Zibby Owens is an author, publisher, podcaster, and mother of four who runs Zibby Owens Media. She is the award-winning creator and host of the popular daily podcast, Wow, Bowing Down, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, in which, so cool, she interviews authors about their books.
Zibby has edited two anthologies, Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology, and Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. I love that title. Along with two forthcoming children's picture books, including Princess Charming, coming out this April, and her memoir will hit the shelves this July. She's the weekly books columnist for Katie Couric Media and the KCM Wake Up Call newsletter, a monthly contributor to Good Morning America, a frequent TV personality, and has contributed to the Washington Post, Parents, Slate, other publications. She always has a book nearby. I'd like to know a little bit about how she does all this when moms don't have time. So welcome, Zibby.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, ladies.
Hi. Well, I think we should just start with that. It's so funny. Your latest book is Moms Don't Have Time for Kids. So if you don't have time for kids, is that how you get everything done? Like, tell us, how are you doing
it? My kids would be horrified by that. No, I spend a lot of time with my kids. Yeah, I have four kids. I don't know. I'm always asked how I get everything done. And I guess a lot of the things I do, I'm like, oh, well, that just won't take that much time. And that won't take that much time. I can add that to my plate. And then I just like quickly do it. And then it all seems to have added up lately. But I guess I just work a lot. But what I do is what I love. So it never feels like working.
Yes.
Right? It's a joy.
Well, we know a little something about that. And we're all sort of in the four kids club here. So that's kind of fun.
I know.
That's awesome. Just keeping the world populated.
Oh my God. I'm thinking between all of us and the stepkids and everything else, we've got 13 kids right now on this podcast. This may be a new record.
Oh my gosh. I know. This is pretty exciting, which basically means we know everything. So in the next 40 minutes, everyone is going to learn everything they ever needed to know about parenting.
You know, it's funny, Zibby, when I started, I used to have a blog called Mom 101 and my tagline was, I don't know what I'm doing either. And I still feel that despite having kids who are teens, like I still feel like every day is a completely new day. And I'm wondering if you feel that same way. Tell me how you figure out what to talk about, what to write about. Is it about the newness of it all each day or something else?
Well, if the question is, do I know what I'm doing with my kids? The answer is probably no. I do like with all the kids that there's constantly new stuff to tackle, right? If it was just the same problems all the time, I think I'd get bored, you know? But that's one of the plus sides of jumping around with the different kids. And of course, I don't know anything, but I feel like I'm like an armchair pediatrician at this point. And I'm sure you both agree after all these different things that have gone on over the years, just from my mom's sense. But I do spend a lot of time with the kids. And how do I decide what to write about? My anthologies were actually compiled by a bunch of authors who have been on my podcast. I've had it all basically started with this podcast and wanting to help moms like me who, before I got divorced and had a little bit of free time on every other weekend, I didn't have any time to read or write or do the things I love to do. And then I ended up with this extra time. And that's when I caught up and thought, well, maybe I could help other moms out there who love to read or miss reading or using their minds and all that good stuff. And so I started the podcast and I've interviewed now over 1,000 authors, which is fun. And I'm a huge reader. And so I got a bunch of them to write essays for my first two anthologies during the pandemic in one of my many ways of just making my way through without losing my mind.
I love that because I think parenting in general, we're all just trying not to lose our mind and save our sanity. But particularly over the last couple of years, it's been difficult. And you've got pandemic stories. I'm going to get to that because I know that they're all going to start emerging, right? Publishing is woefully in some ways behind, but you've really kept up. And I was like, oh, hey, it's a 2020 story. But let's talk specifically about the structure of the book. great because it feels very much like, and I don't know if Liz agrees with me, it sort of felt like our old blogging days. I had a blog called Motherhood Uncensored and Liz had Mom 101. And it was like these short, relatable posts. I use air quotes because these are obviously essays, but really it was about not feeling alone and connecting to a community. And I'm wondering, was that the goal of these anthologies? Were you really trying to remind moms that they're not alone, or, you know, was there something else at play?
Yes, I was trying to remind moms that they weren't alone. I was trying to give them a quick fix, like a quick literary fix. Mm-hmm. I knew they wouldn't necessarily have time to be sitting and lounging and reading, right, when we were all crazy with everybody at home and everything else. So it was to make people feel less alone. It was to make them able to think and feel and get out of their minds. And also to remind people that if we don't take the time for all these things, I mean, my whole brand is sort of tongue in cheek, right? But it's true. I mean, if we don't take time to do the things, all the different categories in the book, like see friends or write or sleep or have sex or all these things, right? Like, what is our life like if we cut out everything we should do and think and feel? So it's also a nod to the fact that life is short, and that's very top of mind these past couple years, and we have to make the best of it. So that's sort of an underlying hopeful message.
I'm still reeling that you just said have sex.
I did think you were going to say we don't know how to have sex or we don't remember how to have sex. So I thought that was going in a totally different direction than just
that was one of the categories. So I had 10 categories of essays in the two anthologies with over 100 essays. And that was one that everyone's like, ooh, I want to hear more about that. In fact, that's how I ended up starting this other random podcast I do called Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. It was supposed to be Moms Don't Have Time to Have Sex, the podcast. And now I have the sex expert like answering questions and I embarrassingly ask her and she's so open and I am so not.
Oh my
so,
gosh, anyway. That's me and Kristen.
Is it?
She wrote a book called The Mominatrix.
Yeah, that's true. I wrote a sex book. I did. And, you know, I was just thinking we need to have someone on here to talk about that. And I find it fascinating that of all the categories in your book, I mean, I guess it's not really that surprising, right? Because it's something that not a lot of people talk about. I think mine was new moms, right? But like after mm-hmm. you've been around, if I say been around the block, that sounds a little seedy. But after you've been around the block like 12 times, no, but you know, as you're aging, whether you're single or divorced or dating, all those things, right? It definitely changes. Certainly for those of us, I don't know, present company, we're all over 40. So like that has been new and interesting. But I mean, let's talk about the categories actually, because as I was going through it, I'm thinking, gosh, okay, so parenting and mothering, like that's a lot of brain space. And I was trying to imagine how you narrowed things down. And then I thought of Liz, who's our resident data nerd. And it was like, did you look for emergent themes? And that's like the qualitative researcher in me. Like she had all these essays and then she was looking to see what the themes were. Or did you just give people topics? Or like, I'm curious to know, like, how did you decide what those sections were going to be?
No, I probably should have done some qualitative analysis, but instead I just sort of went with my gut of what I felt like doing. The first book, the topics were ones that I thought would bring out the most essays. The essays aren't only about like the actual things, but they're inspired by the things. So moms don't have time to sleep could be not just about sleeping, but it could be about overall health. And yes, sleep apnea plays a role, or it could be moms don't have time to have sex could have something to do with your relationship. And just anyway, for the first book, it was literally just five topics that I wanted to hear the writers write about, losing weight or working out or reading or things like that. And then the second book, I actually did a Facebook post and said, okay, moms don't have time to fill in the blank. And most people said, finish my cup of coffee while it's still warm.
Oh, yeah.
But I was like, all right, well, that's not enough for a whole essay category. So I picked some of the ones from that and some of the ones that I just wanted to hear. And then I commissioned the essays. I worked with Carolyn Murnick, another editor, and I emailed a bunch of authors who had been on the show and said, do you have a pitch for an essay based on any of these five general themes? And then we picked the essays and that's how it came to be.
Just even looking through the table of contents, there are so many incredible writers, some of whom we've even had on this podcast, KJ Delantonia, Andrea Buchanan, who we've written about a lot. It's just an incredible list of wonderful writers of all different kinds, but they're all really different in terms of background, experience. Would you say that there's any commonality in their stories? I mean, clearly the idea that moms don't have time for all kinds of things or that we put ourselves last, perhaps. But tell me if there's anything else, or maybe there isn't. Maybe there's more diversity in experiences than you imagined.
There was a lot of diversity in experience, but what it all came down to, and this sounds so hokey, is love and relationships. And that is the most important thing. Whether you're overworked, stressed, or tired, or whatever, a lot of the essays came down to what's really important, which is the people that you love. And it sounds hokey, but it's true. Bolstering your connections, being with the ones you love, all that stuff. I think that's just one theme. And just completely neglecting yourself, which everybody seems to do.
Yes, that is interesting. And you brought up your divorce and how you had more time given the sort of every other weekend or, you know, whatever your situation is. And I had a similar situation where I was always with my kids and then suddenly I wasn't with my kids at all. And it was a bit of a shock to my system, but it didn't take too long to figure out what to do with myself. But, you know, there are moms out there who really need to carve out that time, right? They don't necessarily have those few days or whatever it is, week, depending on your situation, where they are on their own or have their own time. So I'm curious to know, what have you discovered about making that time for yourself? Or what have you heard from other moms? Or what have other moms shared with you in terms of making that a priority, whether it's for reading or just for focusing on yourself?
I think it depends on what it is that pulls the mom enough to want to do it. What I mean is, for some women, obviously, like going to the gym or like going to their regular spin class or doing something physical is the thing that is most essential to their well-being. And I talk to authors like this all the time. Like, what do you do for fun? Well, you know, I have to run every day or I have to do this. So for some people, that's enough. They get out of the house, they clear their head, whatever. Other people want more cerebral escapes. So they have to jump into a book or they have to do a crossword puzzle or something. And then other moms crave connection. And for them, they don't want to be alone. They want to go out with a big group of women and have drinks and all of that. I think everybody has their, they know deep down some of the things that make them feel like they're reclaiming their sanity. And while it looks different for everybody, I think the key is making that time and putting it in the calendar, or else you'll never, ever, ever do it. And also having some sort of accountability. I think that seems to be the key. Are you going to meet your friend for a walk? Are you doing a weekly tennis game? What is it you can do? And obviously, these are privileged things, assuming you can leave your kids with someone. But I think it is really important to either get the exercise or the mental escape or any of that as a break. It's not selfish. It's essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the calendar thing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it makes me think of how we started blogging. It was 17 years ago-ish, right?
16, 17 years
ago. Yes. I know. First of all, like the people reading our site right now that are having kids were like three when we started. But I'm very fascinated by the idea of how mother's storytelling has changed on the web over the past decade and a half or so, and how it hasn't. And certainly social media has changed because more people are publishing photos or telling visual stories. There's less writing or shorter writing, or they're not necessarily, you know, writing their own sites. They're just using social media platforms. So that's the media change. But I'm just really interested in this idea that some of the problems are the same. Some of the challenges, some of the, oh God, we don't make time for ourselves, we don't schedule in our friends, we don't exercise. Like, that hasn't changed. I'm just curious about your insight on that, reading so many authors, some of whom have older kids as well. Like, what are we doing wrong that we're still making the same mistakes over and over?
I think once people learn the answer, then they graduate to the next life stage and then that's it. Do you know what I mean? Like, right? Like, once you finally got the message, then your kids are in college and you're like, whatever, see ya. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're doing anything wrong. I think this is the nature of the beast, right? When all of a sudden your life is about taking care of other people, how do you then pull back a little bit and take care of you? Social media, yes. And, you know, I've been following you guys for a long time and I'm like so excited to be talking to you today because it has been like such a through line for me. So I know what you're saying, but I don't think anybody can plop in and fix it. I'm not sure it's fixable. I think it's something that we all just work on, because you can't, if you're taking care of yourself too much, then like the poor kids are just going to be like abandoned, right? So there's this happy medium. I think we're all just constantly calibrating. And as long as you know that you have a safety net, even if it's a collection of strangers, even if it's people you DM with on Instagram, you don't even know them, but you know they had a bad day too, and so did you, and you can send like a little funny emoji or whatever. I think sometimes that is the glue that's needed to keep everything together. And social media has helped people connect who might not have found each other before.
Yes. Well, that definitely happened with us, right? Well, all of us, and with Liz too.
I'm really moved by what you said about it's not fixable. I find that actually incredibly comforting, because it's sort of like, you know, you get a cold, right? Let's just say colds, as if that's all we're getting these days. And you know, okay, I'm just going to have to be in bed for 2 days. I have to sleep this off. I have to have liquids. I can't take care of everybody. Like, you just accept this is how it is and I will get through this. And this is just what it is. There's nothing I can do to change it. And, you know, when you said it's not fixable, I actually find that incredibly encouraging, because you just know this is a part of parenting and balance and learning about a new life that you just have to go through.
Yeah. And we're dealing with humans. Like, we are humans dealing with humans. A lot of it, you just have to be in it. It's like not anything that you can really prepare for. And it's sort of like that annoying thing that people say, well, you better get your sleep now. Like, what does that do? Me sleeping now doesn't actually help me when I need to sleep. And it's sort of like you can read as much as you want about parenting, right? You can talk to other people, but until you're in it, it's really hard to know exactly what to do and how to do it. And that has to do also with the fact that you're dealing with a brand new person who's never been in the world before.
Yeah. And that all the kids are completely different. I mean, all four of my kids have everything from different foods they like to temperaments to sports to, I mean, they're completely different kids. And so as a mom, it requires constant adaptation. So it's like we're all doing this juggling act the whole time. And it's a beautiful juggling act. And at the end, you're like, oh, wasn't that a great circus? but it is a circus.
Yeah.
And that's okay. So I guess it's just, can you wear the sneakers that'll make you the most comfortable while you're standing in the circus juggling for the next few years? And for some people, those sneakers are each other. And for some people, it's other activities. But it's all about strapping in and going with the crazy. Because if you can just get through and get out the other side, you'll actually end up being far richer emotionally for everything you've gone through. I don't know. I think this is sounding very preachy. And I apologize. And I don't know necessarily what I'm doing either. But I feel like with each kid that gets born, I'm a little calmer in how little control I actually have over anything.
I agree completely. I remember the difference between how I parented my first and how I parented my fourth. I talk a lot about this because I don't know how much of it was actually their daughters, right? So my oldest daughter and my youngest daughter's personality so much as I changed, mm-hmm. right? And it's hard because there's no research study that was done, but like I was so much calmer. Like, so is it a fluke? Was it really my daughter, my younger one, who slept better and would go to other people and wasn't as picky an eater and like all these things? Was it really her?
Right.
Or was it actually me? I can't really say, but I know that I changed. And so probably I had something to do with it. Like my experience in parenting had something to do with how they were different as babies mm-hmm. and as kids. So let's talk about 2020 stories. And I brought this up earlier, but I think it's a big deal because I am really fascinated about how this time in our lives is going to be looked back upon.
Oh gosh, I think about that every day.
Right? And like parenting, I mean, my parenting struggle was real, but then I look at people with kids under four right now. And I'm like, oh my God, how are they doing it? I mean, it's mm-hmm. just kind of incredible the burden that parents in particular have carried during this time. And so you have stories that are from 2020 and beyond. So I'm curious, like, what was it like reading about a big, huge moment in our history that's happening right now? It's dramatic. It's traumatic. What was that like when you got those stories?
Well, you know, not to be a bit of a downer, but I had a lot of loss during COVID. My husband's mother, who was only 63 and in great shape, got COVID from her mother. They lived together, and for 6 weeks, she was in various hospitals and incredibly sick and alone and ended up dying. And
oh
it was
gosh.
Horrible.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry.
So I know. And at the same time, it was over the summer of 2020, and I was home with all the kids, and we were doing like home camp, which now they, by the way, only want to do. And I'm like, that was not a thing. Like, we are not doing that again. But our house, there was so much loss and grief and not being able to be with extended family and managing the kids. So when these essays were coming in for me at the beginning, it was only anxiety. It wasn't the actual loss that had happened. By the time the essays came in for the second book, we had already been through all of that loss. So I look at it in a different frame of mind. Like for me, it's not like, how is your COVID? You know what I mean? Like, how'd you get through the homeschooling? Like for us, it was like, you know, we have like PTSD flashbacks of these calls with doctors and seeing her on FaceTime. And I mean, it was really rough. So yes, it was a unique set of experiences to go through the essays and read everybody's experience. And actually now when I reread them, I have like a different vantage point. But while I was in it, I feel like I was just trying to get through and clinging to other people's stories as sort of lifelines to get me through my own complicated life at the time. So is it interesting in retrospect to have these as like little time capsules? Absolutely. And a lot of them, especially the second book, is not just about COVID at all. I mean, there are a couple that touch on that time, but really they're not. The first one is. So basically, yes, it's interesting as sort of a psychological experiment to go back and re-examine, but it's also just a testament to the strength of sharing stories and sharing words as a way to get ourselves to get through anything.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I still have such a heart and respect for for the moms and dads who pioneered the online storytelling space, like who bared it all and were honest. And some of it was painful and some of it was funny. It was real and authentic and nobody knew what SEO was. Mm-hmm. People weren't making money. They were just sharing stories and building community. And it was such a special, important thing. You know, to this day, sometimes Chris and I will just post quotes and Instagram stories that we find are, you know, inspiring, or we'll write something. And just to hear from one person saying, I really needed to hear that today. I was having the worst day and you shared it and it was just what I needed to see. Like the smallest statement you can make makes a huge ripple. And I feel like this book is just filled with thousands of those potential ripples, like those little drops in the ocean that end up having big impact when they're all put together. I just think what you've done by putting these together and continuing to share your own stories is just so important, especially now that we feel separated by COVID or time and space or restrictions or distancing or life or going back to pre-COVID times, just parenting. For me, those stories keep me going and they always remind me I'm not alone. I'll get through this. Other people have gone through this. There's support. I'm just grateful for it. I'm so glad that books like this are still out, you know?
Yes, me too. I was reading through it and I was like, oh gosh, it takes me back to the days when we didn't have to worry about putting a photo. Remember that, Liz? Remember when we were like, oh, we have to put photos with our blog posts? Why?
Yeah, we had to upload them on PhotoBucket. And
it was just so crazy. And, you know, we started out with really just the power of the words. And I guess I want to end with this. You know, I think of Brené Brown, who has talked about just the power of telling our stories, right? And you, of course, have some heavy hitters in your books, right? KJ Delantonio, we've had on the podcast, Laura Tremaine. I mean, some amazing people in your anthologies, but you don't necessarily have to be or identify as a writer to share your story. You know, maybe it's not published in a book, but it's in a journal. It's on social media. It's in emails to friends and family. I don't know. There are so many different ways to share our stories. And I wonder if you just talk a little bit about why it's so important for people out there, for moms out there, whether they identify as writers or not, to share their stories and continue to do that.
I think sharing stories, that's like the fundamental human means of connection, right? This is what we do to connect to one another. We listen, we take it in, we talk, we feel understood, we understand others. There's no time when we're as vulnerable, I feel like, as when we're moms, when we're robbed of the ground on which we stood, whether that was a job or an academic career, whatever, right? We're suddenly knocked off our feet and in a whole new dimension of living in every way. And so what time do we need stories more is when you're at your most fragile. So I think that's why women's stories are so essential. They bond us together. They make us laugh. I think laughter is like the way to get through even the worst of times, obviously, but so important. And sometimes you can find yourself in a story where you think you have nothing in common with the person, right? This person lives in this country or whatever. They're, on the outside, your lives may be completely dissimilar. And then you realize that underneath it all, there's something that is so common and that you get each other. And I think it fuels people enough to just be able to go back to folding their own laundry or doing their own thing, because there's someone across the world whose life might look totally different, but you know what? We're in it together. And sharing stories is the way we teach and learn and feel and think. So whether it's these short essays written by best-selling authors who I have in my book, or it's a blog, or it's a podcast, or it's anything, the stories that we share, that's how we connect. It shores up our resources at the times at which we're most vulnerable.
Yes.
It's the village, man. It's the village.
It is the village. And I also love the saying of like, we're in the same storm, but we're in different boats.
I like that.
We are all in the same storm right now and in parenting, but you know, in different boats. So Zibby, your books, or your, well, you've got a lot happening, right? But the two anthologies in particular, Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology, and Moms Don't Have Time To Have Kids. They're available wherever you find your books. You can find them online. And your website is Zibby Owens, ZibbyOwens.com. And you're at Zibby Owens on social media. And you're going to stick around for our cool picks of the week, right?
Yes. Awesome. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, now it's time for
Cool Picks of the Week. Cool Picks of the Week.
And Zibby, you are our guest. That means you get to go first.
Ooh, my favorite new coolest pick is Thrive Cosmetics mascara. It is unbelievable. I don't really understand, but you don't even have to use makeup remover to take it off. It looks like you'd like just got your makeup done. It stays all day. It doesn't smudge. It's like the miracle solution I've been looking for.
Well, welcome to our club of Thrive Cosmetics lovers, Zibby. And we're always happy to have someone else espouse its greatness, because sometimes just one person isn't enough, but I'll tell you what, it's my go-to. I love
it.
I'm so
great.
So good. Yes,
I love it. Yet added to bath past it yet. I know. I love like the BB cream they have. Like I just love their stuff, but I have not yet tried the mascara. I don't know why. Something's stopping me. But now I think this is the sign I've been looking for.
Yeah. Zibby likes it. I like it. Lisa likes it. Get it.
That's it. That's all I need.
Yeah. That's it. You're done. Sold. All right, Liz. Good. I'm peeking at yours and I'm very jealous. That's all I'm
going to say. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I had a friend a few months back who has an in the shoe industry. And she was like, Liz, hot tip. I know. Oh, Kristen. She's like, spring, summer trend. It's going to be sandals with like puffy textured braided straps. And she actually gave me a pair of Dolce Vita sandals because her friend worked for this place and they didn't fit her and they were in my size. It was a weird story, but I ended up with these gorgeous shoes. Yeah, it's nice to have a little sample size, 6.5 foot sometimes. So I started looking online and sure enough, all the spring shoes I love them. So I went a little nuts. I wrote a big roundup for Cool Mom Picks about all of my favorite puffy textured and braided sandals. I cannot wait for spring to come just for sandals. They may even replace my beloved tikis, if you can believe that.
I don't even know what's happening.
I've been wearing those flip-flops for like a billion years. I love them. And I even ordered a couple pairs of fairly affordable Vince Camuto version. You know, I love their shoes. So anyway, I'm going to have them all up on Cool Mom Picks. We'll link to it on our podcast page, but you have to see these. They're great. And I even found ones like in the $35 range. Like it's not a super expensive trend. And please spring, come.
Yeah, I know. I was just outside driving my daughter to school and I'm like, I'm ready for warm weather. So yeah, that's very exciting. And of course, we'll link up all our picks, Zibby's books, everything on coolmompicks.com. Well, mine is Peacemaker, which is that new show on HBO Max with John Cena.
Yes.
It's like post-Suicide Squad. And let me tell you what, it is hilarious. If you want a really solid laugh, it's campy, it's funny. It's, you know, there's some violence. There's some, you know, questionable language, depending on how old your kids are. My son is, you know, my teenage son can handle it. So
isn't that James Gunn series? And he's so brilliant and funny.
It's so good. And I have to say, I would not have chosen, it just wasn't a thing. I don't know why I wouldn't have picked it because I'm a huge fan of like Marvel and Star Wars and geekery. But let me tell you, John Cena is great. It is really good. Supporting cast is awesome. It's really funny. So if you're looking for something that's like, you know, I just got done with Succession, so like I need some brain rest, Peacemaker will give you solid laughs. It's definitely for grownups, really funny. And it's on HBO Max. And apparently the season finale of Peacemaker, I'm a little behind, was their number one watched finale of all time, I read somewhere.
HBO's? More than Game of Thrones?
I don't know. And Succession? Game of Thrones, but anyway.
I'm going to have to.
I don't know.
I'm data nerding that. Data I'm going to go look that up because that would be crazy.
And meanwhile, this year is only 2 months, so who knows? But anyway, Peacemaker, HBO Max, worth the subscription. Plus also Succession's on there too.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to have great shoes. I'm going to have great eyelashes. And then I'm going to sit home and watch it. It basically sounds like the last 2 years for me, only with better lashes.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Spawned. Huge thanks to our guest, Zibby Owens, and our awesome engineer, John Bowen. And hey, listen, if you've got a moment, you can leave us a 5-star review. It's so easy to do. You just literally press the 5 stars. It's so easy. Liz, have you left a 5-star review for your favorite podcast lately?
I have. I do. I do that now.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, you know how easy it is.
I realize it's like a little way to give back in the world. It costs me nothing, not even very much time.
Yes.
And then that way I know that I'm supporting them and I'm helping other people find them. And it's a nice thing. So if you want to do that for us right back, we would love that. That would be great.
Yeah. And subscribe. You can download our episodes. Everything that you do, those like small little actions actually really help us get to more people, which of course we love. And then you can join us on Facebook, where we have a recipe rescue group, we have OutTech Your Kids, and of course, we have our own Spawn podcast community where we chat about show topics, pretty much everything else. And we also put the episodes when they go live, they typically go live first. We put them in the Spawn podcast community. So if you're into that sort of thing, then that's where you want to be when everything goes live.
For sure. And by the way, if you're on Instagram or Twitter or Pinterest, we're there too. Like wherever you are, you'll pretty much find us. So we make it easy for you.
Yes.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to Spawned. This is Liz.
And this is Kristen. Have a great day.
Bye.